This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Mike Somich on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money, Mike Somich with a big smile. He's happy. It's divisional weekend here as we get to it. I'm Patrick Maher, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Make sure you check that out. All right, here we go. So generally, wild card weekend, you get some duds. Mm-hmm. We did not. I mean, if you want to call the late night game between New England and, of course, the Chargers a dud, outside of that, it might be the best weekend we've seen in the postseason in my 47 years on this planet, Mike Somich. But we've got matchups coming up here, and we're going to get into them. Anything prior to breaking down these numbers that have sufficiently baked?
No, I think your points to last week was good. Look, it was a phenomenal weekend, four great games, then two lackluster games, but those lackluster games were still one possession when we were heading to the second half. So there was still some intrigue that was involved in them. I think it is fascinating how we're getting a rematch here, how we're getting some numbers that don't necessarily make sense. So you kind of either have to go with or against the market, kind of how it has shaped out these games. So looking forward to talking through everything NFL.
Right before we get to the numbers, you have a family. Your wife and daughter come to you and say you can watch one game. Oh. I want you to rank them. Game you'd watch down to the one you don't care about. Now, we care about all of them because we're betting them. There's only four games. Go ahead.
Number one is Rams-Bears. Not close.
Correct. That is the correct answer.
There is no other choice. Number two, I think that you could kind of go a couple directions, but I'm going to go Broncos-Bills number two. And then I guess Niners Seahawks 3 and Patriots Texans 4. I think that's
interesting.
Where I put them.
That's it. I go obviously Rams Chicago 1. It's not even close.
Yeah,
I actually go Houston New England 2. I find it fascinating because of that Houston defense. I go Buffalo Denver 3, which you had 2, and San Francisco Seattle. I mean, listen, I feel like we saw it yesterday, but we'll see it again. And San Francisco's a great story if we're being fair. And so is Seattle.
Frankly. I'm shocked based on seeing your picks that you have that game at 4. Because like me ranking it lower makes sense this way that I'm growing. You ranking it lower the way you're going doesn't make any sense to me.
We shall see. Let's get it started. 391, Buffalo, Denver. This number, so we were Buffalo when we sat here, a point and a half. There's a couple pick'ems across the board. Make sure you go over to VSiN and get your odds pages so you can see where the numbers are. But it's pretty consistent now. This number is Denver, a point and a half. Has it moved the right way?
Yeah, it has. I mean, you asked me on Sunday, what is the line for this game? Do you remember what I said?
I think you said one and a half Denver.
Exactly. And where are we sitting? So I didn't bet it. Woo, look at that. I did not bet it on Sunday. And I'm sitting here like, well, maybe I should have gotten in. But the move through the zero, not a huge move, right? Like this is a minor situation from a move perspective. If we see it get to Denver 3, I'm in on Buffalo. I don't think we ever see that. I don't mind Buffalo teasers here if you want to push it up above 7. I don't feel like I have a great feel for this game. And mm-hmm. I'm looking at this and I'm sitting here and I'm saying, well, I played Jacksonville 1.5 against Buffalo last weekend, but I have Jacksonville power rated higher than I do Denver. And then this is basically saying they're the same team. I'm more scared of Jacksonville than I am Denver. So that kind of pushes me to say, I guess I lean Buffalo's side here. But I think this is going to be a pretty good football game, Patrick, and I you don't have to bet them all.
Yeah, of the four, this is the one I don't have an opinion on because I love Jacksonville last week, and we said it. It's very easy. At this point, if Josh Allen doesn't play great, it would be shocking. That's where he's at in his career. Obviously, he's lost wide receivers. I don't think it really matters. The one thing about Denver is the pass rush is the best in football. I've got them behind Seattle and Houston. I think you do too as far as defense, because you can move the ball on this Denver defense. The questions remain the same with the quarterback position for Denver. There are times when that Denver offense, you'll have 5 straight sets where they do nothing at all. If you don't want to bet it, I completely understand it. This would be a good time to tell you we've got AI-powered props over at VSiN, and you can sign up for $9.99 for your first month. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe, because this is where I'd be looking at props. This game, I don't have an opinion on the side or the total.
It feels like Josh Allen rush attempts probably going over here, if you want to look at that angle. He's going to have to run the football against this Denver defense. They're able to rush with the front four and get home. You're going to have situations where he's going to be forced to take off because of the coverage on the back end. I don't mind his rush attempts. His rush yards might be held down a little bit, but rush attempts a little interesting. Harvey's going to be the other key guy when you talk about props, right? Because this is a very bad Bills run defense. offense. We saw ETN and we saw Basil Tuttum both gash him last week, specifically in outside zone runs. That kind of points toward Harvey. My issue with Harvey is that, like, Sean Payton is a maniacal person when it comes to prop betting, and you never know what running back he's going to feature, and you do have Jaleel McLaughlin back there. We might see Harvey more of the pass-catching running back. That's where my main concern is. So I actually like Harvey over reception yards in this spot. I think he gets quite a bit of work on those quick flares outside, trying to create mismatches on the edge. So I'll take Harvey over reception yards, Allen over rush attempts here, Patrick.
Love it. Good job. And I think one thing America can rally around is we can cheer against Sean Payton, who as a player is a total scab. And as a coach is just demeaning, condescending, freaking weirdo. So let's go Bills.
Let's cheer for Sean McDermott. Why not?
And by the way, I think if McDermott loses this, I'll say it, 100% he gets fired.
Wow. Okay. That's a little bit of a hot take. Last week, I agree with you. I think he was out if they lost last
week.
He's
out. No, he's got to advance to a championship game. Oh, no. He's been there 12 years.
I get it. And you have Josh Allen. Like, honestly, the fact that the Bills were going to open a favorite in all three games as a wild card team, if they are able to advance to the AFC title game, tells you the expectations laid in on this Bills team.
Mark the sharp money pod. McDermott out when he loses this game. If he loses, I hope he wins because I want to see Peyton lose. Next up on Saturday, San Francisco's at Seattle. We've seen this. San Francisco, you know, it's almost like San Francisco right now. It's like when they lost Kittle, Shanahan's like, good. At this point, we're way beyond trying to pretend like we're a full team. So the constant motivation that can be built with our backs against the wall is tremendous. They go to Philly. They beat the champs. They come to Seattle. Seattle rested. We've seen these two teams recently, obviously. Now, this number was 7.5 pretty consistently. That half has dropped at most shops, including FanDuel and DraftKings. Circa is still Seattle 7.5, and that's where we stand.
That is where we stand, Patrick. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, I kind of like San Francisco this week. I think a touchdown in the hook is a little bit too much here. I'm going to go ahead and take the 7.5. The last game, it was just 13-3. It was only a 10-point game. Let's take a little walk down memory lane here, Patrick. Do you remember that Week 18 game? Let's talk stats a little bit. Seattle had 23 first downs. San Francisco had 9 in that game. San Francisco had 173 total yards, 361 for the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle ran the ball for 180 yards, 4 yards per tote in that game. They missed 2 field goals. They had a drive that ended on downs in the red zone. That could have been 24-3. That could have been 31-3. That offense just did not execute down inside the red zone. They were 0-3 in the red zone. I don't see what changes if you're San Francisco. I mean, you go back. McCaffrey had 23 yards rushing. Their leading receiver was Juwan Jennings with 35 yards. This Seattle defense is going to suffocate him again. You go back, you watch the Week 1 tape. Seattle's defense was really good in that game. They held San Francisco to 17 points. They ironically scored 13 in that game as well. This is a better version. You saw the difference between Week 1 to Week 18. I don't see the answer for San Francisco as currently constructed.
Comfortable with both 7.5 laying it?
Yes. I'm going to lay the 7 because I can get a better number.
Of course.
But I don't mind alts. We'll put it that way. I think this could be a 14-20-point game on Seattle's side.
Yeah, I do like San Francisco catching the 7.5, but I also really like, you can find at DraftKings, 45.5. I like the under.
Yeah, we
really
talked about that at 46.5 on Sunday. That one's, to me, yeah. Go back to the under there because this is... Seattle's going to suffocate him, and you like the 7.5. So what is what's your expectation from a game script here where San Francisco covers? Do you think this is like 13-17 Week 1 where it was a close game, low scoring? Do you think this is a shootout? What expectation do you have around catching that 7.5?
Just tendencies and familiarity and the idea that the way San Francisco beat Philadelphia was Shanahan's trick bag. So I do think they score. Because they just have to unload. They're going to do so. They're going to get exotic. You had wide receivers throwing touchdown passes, obviously. The usage for McCaffrey, when you want to look at props, is going to be off the charts. Purdy's playing really well. The problem I have, it's less about what Seattle's defense is going to do, and it's more about can Seattle's offense go and do to a linebacker core and to a defense that is non-existent. So if you see early Seattle and obviously Darnold clicking, that's where I'd be concerned about my bet. I just think you're going to get enough from San Francisco offensively. And Saleh's been a whiz as far as schematically. Now, he was going up against a very rudimentary offense in Philadelphia, if we're being completely fair. I just really trust scheme and familiarity with San Francisco to keep this close. I think Seattle wins.
Yeah, my second grader was able to figure out that Philadelphia offense. It was that rudimentary. That was bad, dude. That it was just, you went back and watched that tape, and it's like, why are we running go routes on the outside almost every single play when you can't throw the ball 20 yards down the field? Like, what are we doing? I think Seattle has a lot of fun running the football here, Patrick. I think this is just a situation where Seattle goes nuts on the ground. They're able to run all day, both Charbonnet and Walker, against a San Francisco team that just can't stop the run, and an offensive line that's been getting better as the season's gone along. I think this is a really fun same game parlay. If you want to get nutty, you can play like Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet to both go over their totals. You throw in a Kenneth Walker touchdown and a defensive score for Seattle. And then you add in like an alt and you go, let's say 13.5 for Seattle, put it all together, you're at 45-1. I think that's the style of a same gamer that you can attack this with and tell a story of Seattle just dominating on the ground, dominating defensively.
Beautiful. Let's go to Sunday. Houston, New England. Now, there are reports it's going to be freezing temps. There are new reports as we sit here on the 15th of January, Thursday, sharp money, that it looks like you could have pretty intense snow.
Let's go.
So, as we get closer, you have a little bit of a snow globe there. Here's what I would say. Obviously, Houston's the best defense remaining. New England, if New England plays the way they did for a half, like they did against the Chargers, because remember, this is symmetrical. Houston's being treated like the Chargers. I think Houston is better than the Chargers. We talked about it right before we came on. It was obvious Stroud had the yips against Pittsburgh, and you know, they should have hung 50 on Pittsburgh. I do like Houston in the matchup. I think Mark's props are something to look at. You go into it, you're D'Amico Ryans. You lean on the defense. You run the football, which they had success against Pittsburgh, and I think that's the key, and I also like a low-scoring affair here.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a pretty low scoring game. I when it comes to the number, I think it's a very simple way to look at this. You could just catch 3.5 with the Chargers. Now you can catch 3.5 with Houston. What's your number for Houston against the Chargers? I'd have Houston laying 3 on a neutral.
I agree.
How do I not bet Houston plus the 3.5 if that was the same price we just saw on the Chargers? To me, that the number is, I think you could make a case for 3 if you said, well, Nico Collins is out. That's a serious downgrade to the offense. It's a playoff game. Stroud was a little yippy. Fine, make it 3. 3.5, I can never get to. So give me Houston plus the points at 3.5. I'm a little worried about Marks, because this has been a very good run defense for New England all season long. And I would expect, especially now that they have their D tackle back, that they're going to be able to stop the run. That's my biggest concern with Houston, is how are they going to find points? I think this is a low-scoring game. I like the under here at 41. This is a situation. I think this is 13-10. I think this is, you know, 17-14. I think that's the type of game that we are headed toward here. I want the points. I want the under. I want to see what Drake May does here too. I mentioned to you, like, last time, you're like, who's the all-star? I thought Drake May was good in the fourth quarter. I went back and rewatched. That was not a great game from Drake May. Like, I let's see what he does here, second playoff game against what I believe is one of the best defenses we've seen in the last 20 years. I think Houston's defense is that good. And if they are, I think they're going to cause problems for the New England offense on Sunday.
Yeah, I just went back to 2000 with the Ravens because that's kind of a standard and a benchmark. Before that, 85 Bears. Philly's defense was tremendous last year. I like the back end of this Houston defense than last year's Philly defense. You had Darius Slay running around out there. So I think Houston is an all-time deep. I think it's a great defense.
Yes.
I when you can leave the two corners alone, you can get so exotic. Let's see what a second-year quarterback does against that with the constant pressure as well. The left tackle, the Campbell kid, was absolutely disrespected against the Chargers. What's Danielle Hunter or Anderson Jr. going to do against that kid? And May holds it for a couple extra beats. He will fumble the football.
He's got to take care of it. And this is a Houston team that's very good against running quarterbacks. They're not going to let Drake May go out and scramble all over them either, which has been a big part of his EPA as the year's gone along. We've seen him take a lot of sacks this year. If you want to knock Drake May for one thing, and he led the NFL in EPA, so I'm not out here trying to just slander the kid. Great deep ball, great scrambling, lots of sacks. This is where Houston can take advantage of that last part. If they limit the scrambling, create the sacks, and say, guess what? You want to throw it deep to Budde? That's fine. We've got Laster. We've got Stingley out there, right? You've got big-time guys. You've got Petrie roaming in the secondary. Like, this is a Texans team that matches up very well against any offense, let alone one where I'm not overly scared of the run game, and I know I can get pressure.
Yep, well put. Rams, Chicago, just quick on this. A caller called into Mad Dog and was like, you know, I don't understand it. Chicago's everybody's darling, yet you're always talking about three being a key number. They're laying 3.5, and they were laying 4, being the Rams on the road. The bottom line is the market has been obsessed with the Rams all year, and it started before the season. When you have the perception set before the season, it's hard to break that whole market perception throughout the year. And then conversely, it feels like to the market that the Chicago Bears have been getting lucky. A 1-point win against Vegas, a 2-point win against the Giants, an onside kick needed, and the second one against Green Bay to win that football game. Luck versus we expect this team to win a Super Bowl. We expect the Bears to be here next year. That's the reason you have a 3.5, because if you set this at 2.5, the books would have gotten murdered.
Yeah, I mean, you can't be 2.5. It'd be so much Rams money, it would have been unbelievable. Even at 3, it would have been just a flood of Rams money. So you're kind of forced to go on the other side of 3 here for the Rams. This is just one of those matchups that just could deliver chaos. Because the Bears love coming back. You know what the Rams like to do? Blow leads. Like, this sets up perfectly for the Rams to just jump out early, and then the Bears should just storm back. I don't think that the Bears have the ability to storm back against this Rams team. I do think this is a situation where without TJ Edwards, you have to be worried about the Bears run defense. And this is a Rams team where everyone talks about Stafford. Everyone talks about Puka. Everyone talks about Davante Adams. They're pretty damn good at running the football too, Patrick. And they're going to be able to run the football on Sunday against this Bears team. We're expecting frigid temperatures here. We're talking like teens to single digits at kick with wind chill at sub-zero. This is going to be a very, very cold game. I think this is a situation where the Rams just pound the ball, and just kind of beat down this Chicago Bears team that's not able to come back on them. I laid the 3.5 with the Rams, which, by the way, I think this kicks at like 4.5, 5. Like, there was so much late Packers money last week that line pushed out to 2, 2.5 in certain places. I think you're going to see late Rams money this week, so I want to get the 3.5 while it's still on the board.
Agreed with laying the 3.5. I like San Francisco, Seattle under, Houston, New England under. This is the one where I think we see points. Forget the weather.
Ooh.
I don't care. I think you're going to this. The secondary for the Rams is not good. You have Forbes running around back there. This is going to be, even if you're at the break and it's 10-7, Chicago scores in the fourth. Consistently, you will see them go YOLO. There will be points.
I don't, this one, if the weather wasn't so crappy, I would be on the over. The weather is like, it's never an under for me, but the weather is scaring me away from being on the over. Do love a prop in this game. I don't think people have realized that we've almost gone to a complete split in the backfield for the LA Rams. 5 of the last 6 games, Blake Corum has gotten 10-plus carries. 5 of the last 6, he's had 45-plus rushing yards. He's sitting at 44.5 on the rush total for the game. Let's take Blake Corum over 44.5 rush yards. I think this is much closer to an even split with Kyren Williams. And again, no TJ Edwards. I think this is a very gettable run defense on the Bears' side, especially in this weather, especially if I believe the Rams are going to be ahead. All of that pushes toward Corum being able to go over that 44.5 number.
Okay, we will circle back at the end and give our official picks. There you go, divisional round. I wanted to point out something because obviously, Mike, the coaching carousel continues. 9 openings. Looks like the Giants have filled it with Harbaugh, so that knocks it down to 8 openings. Tomlin, for some, a bit of a shock. But I wanted to go here just quickly based on what we're looking at in the divisional round. The bottom line with the NFL is get yourself a quarterback, get yourself a coach. The rest of it literally mostly doesn't matter. I'm being a little facetious, but let's go through it. Last year, Mayo won 4 games with this Patriot team. Vrabel just won a playoff game. Lovie Smith was before D'Amico Ryans in Houston.
Need I say, a turnaround.
Need I say more? Pete Carroll was long in the tooth. They made the right call. McDonald comes in. McDonald won 10 games his first year. He got a bye his second year. Coaching. Before McVay, who was a wild card loser, but in the postseason, his very first year was Jeff freaking Fisher. Get yourself a coach. Before Ben Johnson, Eberflus won 4 games. Ben Johnson just won a playoff game. Before Sean Payton, Nathaniel Hackett won 4 games. Get yourself a coach.
They're terrible.
This before is, this Shanahan, is awful. Before Shanahan, who's been on a crazy ride with San Francisco since he got there, Chip Kelly won 4 or 5
games. Hey, good recruiter.
This is literally the point. You're looking at these, what, 4, 8 teams. You got a coach, you got a quarterback. That's really what it comes down to. And that can take us into our conversation about who's going to be hired with these 9 openings. You're always going to get 6 or 7 openings every single year of the 32. This year, we've got a preponderance of openings. Any reaction to the coaching prior and now?
Well, 9 with, like, now 8, because Harbaugh is going to take the New York job, it looks like. But you also have Philadelphia, Green Bay, and Buffalo that we're going to call in limbo still. So, like, it could be nearly half the league that is looking for a new head coach. Let me tell you, Patrick, there's not 11 good head coaching candidates out there. I'm a little bummed that Harbaugh is heading to New York because I wanted him in Miami. I thought that we had a realistic shot of being able to get him down there. As far as, like, New York goes, I think it's a good hire. You can't, like, knock getting Harbaugh to go there. I'm surprised Harbaugh wanted to go there. Like, Joe Sheen is your GM. He's not great. The player personnel up and down the Giants organization is filled with Maras who, like, are basically never fireable inside that organization. Like, I'm surprised Harbaugh didn't go somewhere he doesn't want more control. But it is tempting to say, hey, guess what? Here's a ready-made left tackle, quarterback, wide receiver one, and a very good defensive line year one in a fourth-place schedule. And, oh, by the way, the division's full of donkeys. Like, I get the draw to head to New York there. I'm still a little surprised he didn't want more control.
I'm not being a contrarian. I think it's a fine hire. It's a good hire. They kind of needed an adult with the Giants. They've just had a revolving door. Joe Judge, need I say more, of just donks. But if he was vetting teams, he wasn't being interviewed. He was going in being like, what do you have for me? And may I ask why the Giants didn't look across the table and say, John, over the past 5 years, nobody has given up more double-digit leads than you. Nobody had King Henry and Lamar Jackson. Why are you vetting us? You're a 63-year-old good head coach that won a Super Bowl 15 years ago. Stop with the nonsense. Yes, he's consistent. Yes, he brings credibility. But it's not like you got Paul Brown.
No, you don't have Paul Brown. You know what else you don't have? Any coordinator. He's not a D coordinator.
He's bringing Monken.
He's not. No. But he himself is not an offensive or defensive coordinator. He's just a dude. He's a CEO. But he needs a CTO. He needs a CFO. He can't run the company by himself. And that's where I start to really be like, are we sure in today's modern day NFL, this is what you want to hire? I want to hire an offensive guy. But you know why, Patrick? Those are the guys that get hired and get stolen from your organization. Like the DCs, people come in, poach them. Those are a lot easier to replace. There are very, very few defensive coordinators who I would say are elite level guys. Where it's like, we will not lose these guys. One of them is Mike McDonald, who's over in Seattle, has a head coaching job. Then you got like Vic Fangio, Steve Spagnuolo. They don't really want a big-time gig. They don't want to be a head coach. They just want to run their defenses. You look at like the Detroit situation with Ben Johnson. You can't retain him unless you fire your head coach, but you're going to be successful to the point where you can't fire your head coach. I want Stefanski. I think he was the best candidate in this cycle. I'm surprised the Giants didn't look at an offensive mind, especially with Dart and Neighbors and Scadaboo and your Thomas, your left tackle, and your defense with it. Like, I don't understand why you didn't look offense here, because let's say that Harbaugh does a great job, finds a great OC, great DC, plugs them in, they're gone. You're just going to lose them. And Todd Monken's not even a good offensive coordinator. I don't know what we're doing. We've been bringing him in anyway.
Stefanski got lucky because it doesn't have the cachet. The better job's in Atlanta. And I can't be convinced any other way. I listen, regardless of what you think about the quarterback, you got a top 5 player in the NFL in Bijan. You got a legit wide receiver one. You have a good offensive line. And you have a ton of pieces all of a sudden on defense to go to town with. You don't have any pressure in Atlanta. Nobody cares about pro football in Atlanta. You could just chill, build a program. The Giants, this is one of the top five organizations in the world. Over in Atlanta, you're just hanging out. And Atlanta has what you love, everything I say. You just, it's crazy.
What?
You don't think the Giants are a top five organization?
I mean, in the world, just a little bit of an exaggeration.
I mean, Real Madrid, Barcelona.
Oh, what? It, like, including all of the soccer teams?
I don't know how to measure it. I'm just saying the Giants are a big deal.
Are
That's
they?
All.
Do we care?
Are they a bigger deal than the Atlanta Falcons?
Yes, they are a bigger
deal
than
Atlanta
Falcons.
Okay, we can agree with that.
I'm not going to get you there.
But I do believe Stefanski. I don't think there's a difference between Jackson Dart and Penix Jr.
One can run and has good knees. The other one has...
The injuries are... Yes, yeah, the injuries. But I don't know that they have a quarterback with the Giants.
No,
I'm not sure.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, we'll see what
Maybe
Dart's able
do.
To do. I, the other concern with Dart here is, like, bro, you got to stop getting hit. Like, you got checked for concussion 8 times in 10 games, something crazy like that this year. We kind of need to chill if you want to be an NFL quarterback long term. I don't mind the Atlanta job. I think it's a pretty good job. You know, the job that, like... If I'm Stefanski, I'm probably going to Baltimore. But, like, hey, I get it. Like, because then Lamar is a real deal quarterback. I don't care about this season.
Of course.
He was banged up. Like, Lamar, to me, is the quarterback you want to go chase. I will tell you this. You know the job I would never take? The worst job in this cycle? It's the Pittsburgh Steelers. And it's not even close. You have absolutely nothing on that roster, and expectations are through the roof, and you're replacing Mike Tomlin. Hard pass on taking that Pittsburgh job. I would rather take the Arizona Cardinals job than the Pittsburgh job.
Yeah, the only thing about Pittsburgh is, you know, since 69, it's Knoll, it's Cowher, it's Tomlin. So the Rooneys are going to give you a runway, but I agree. I don't like the structure. I don't like where they've dedicated their money. And that's true for Miami and Arizona are dubious jobs right now. And the two obvious reasons, Tua and Kyler.
Yeah, I mean, you've got no shot at a quarterback, right? You've got to figure out how to deal with the dead cap space in both of those locations. Because, look, you're going to get rid of Tua and Kyler aren't starting for you anymore. So no matter what way you cut this, you're going to have some financial issues there. The one thing with Miami is at least you have an owner that's willing to throw cash around and an owner that's willing to pay assistance and try and build a staff there. So, like, that was my reason why I thought Harbaugh would end up there. Because Miami's owner could have been just like, we'll give you $15, $20 million a year. You can have $20 million for your staff. Go. You can have control. And I wouldn't have been shocked if Ross had done that. That was the one organization I thought may make that move. But, like, I don't even hate the Vegas job at this point. Low expectations.
They got money to spend.
Money.
They got plenty of money.
To me, that's not a terrible job. There are some jobs where I would, no interest. Hard pass. And I think the Giants one, ironically, I think is a great job. I just don't think Harbaugh is the right fit for him.
I mean, I agree with you about Miami. I mean, listen, no state income tax. You live in Miami. You're a human being. That kind of matters. But a $57 million cap hit from Tua next year to be a backup.
I get it.
That's not
great. Still just trade Tua and Kyler straight up. Just flip them and see what happens. Just have a little bit of fun, NFL. Where do you put the Cleveland job and the Tennessee job in this? Because I think the Tennessee job is actually a pretty good one because you get Cam Ward and absolutely no pressure, although you do have the kind of kooky owner there.
I like Tennessee. I honestly, Tennessee to me, fourth pick, they have plenty of cap space. Seem to have a young general manager that knows what he's doing. They have a talent deficiency, but I do like the quarterback. Not a ton of pressure in Tennessee. Moving into a state-of-the-art stadium, there's kind of things I like. I mean, Tennessee to me would be above Cleveland. Cleveland owner, the division is going to be brutal. The Watson contract is still punitive. And then you move over to Shadur. I'm not talking about the kid. It is just drama. And then the low-key part about Cleveland, you got to deal with Myles Garrett and his passive aggressiveness.
Yeah, that is true. He could sack you at any moment. Are we sure that's a good division now?
Well, that's fair. It's just traditionally been, Pittsburgh's not going to be very good. Baltimore's going to be great. And Cincinnati, you would expect Cincinnati
donks.
To bounce back.
Cincinnati's
it's funny.
A donk organization. Let's just
be honest. No. They don't spend any cash. I don't think Cleveland's a very good job.
I don't think it's that good a job either. Do you want to know and this might be a little Homer, Miami Dolphins Homerish. You know what the most interesting part of this entire cycle to me is? What happens to Mike McDaniel? Does he decide
he's going to get a head coaching job?
Does he decide he wants to be a head coach in Cleveland, in Tennessee, in Arizona, Or does he say, I'll go ahead and take one of the open OC positions with the Los Angeles Chargers or the Philadelphia Eagles or one of these teams where he could probably resurrect his image in a year and then go decide to go to the right quarterback a year later? Like we saw Ben Johnson wait for the right job, right? We saw Vrabel wait for the right job. Does McDaniel just take a job or does he wait for a job and then see what's available next cycle?
Well, like you said, I mean, you could be coaching Joe Burrow next year.
Josh Allen, Jordan Love next year.
You don't want to be thirsty. Tomlin's not going to take a job this year. He just made $18 million this past year. Tomlin, whether he does TV, I have no clue, but he'll sit, he'll wait. People will get more thirsty for him and he'll have his first pick next year.
I mean, I think we're talking about Philadelphia, Green Bay, Buffalo, like major franchises, Cincinnati, that all have coaches that are going to be on the hot seats starting next year if they're the same as they are currently right now. Wouldn't you wait for one of those four jobs? Like, doesn't that feel like a way to just resurrect your career with like legitimate star stud quarterbacks? Like if he gets the Baltimore job, go take the Baltimore job. I don't think he's getting the Baltimore job. I think that he's got to go be an OC somewhere, be awesome, and then he's got a shot at one of these big time gigs.
Yeah, I agree. Like with McDaniel, the obvious answer is go to Detroit, run an offense, and then pick a head coaching job next year. There, to come back to your argument, in lies the problem with keeping a meat stick like Dan Campbell. You're going to bring in McDaniel. He's going to run a great offense. And you're going to lose him in a year. I think we kind of sleep on the sense of like McDaniel has a wife, has children. We're moving you to Detroit for 9 months and then we're going to go. So there is something that goes into it, but I agree. Don't get desperate. McDaniel, if I were McDaniel, I'd take the Tennessee job and just say, give me a 5-year deal. Let me stretch out here and work with Cam Ward.
Yeah, I actually don't hate the Tennessee job for him. You know what? I now have decided what's going to happen. He is going to get the Detroit OC job. They're going to win 14 games, and you're going to have to decide whether or not to fire Dan Campbell or not after the next season.
They won 15 games, driving the limo
to get him out of there.
They won 15 games, let Ben Johnson walk. You're right. It would be such a conundrum because the obvious answer is fire Campbell or say, do you want to just go up to the front office or something, dummy? And then bring in and just say, McDaniel, this is a pretty obvious answer. But that is the conundrum.
That is the conundrum.
And think about it this way. The John Harbaugh thing, who's 63, it makes me laugh so much because it makes you think, what would people be saying if McVay was available? How many jobs keep their current head coach instead of just saying, we'll give everything away to a 39-year-old that is an all-timer?
Zero. Zero franchises would not fire their head coach, Sean McVay. Well, here's the funny part. Who would be ballsy enough to fire their head coach preemptively before knowing he's going
to
come there?
I don't mean to be disrespectful to Michael and the Patriots, but if Sean McVay were available, you say to Mike Vrabel, that was awesome. Good job, bro.
Yeah.
You don't live on the same planet.
Can we trade you? Can we trade you to the Rams so you still get a good gig and we'll just get McVay back?
Yeah, you seem like a nice guy, Mike. but this is Sean McVay. This is much different. So, yeah, that's what it made me think of with Harbaugh. It's like, oh, my gosh. And you see what happens. People think, oh, these guys are in the NFL. They must be deities and levitating above us. What happens is one team gets FOMO because the other team says we like him. And they're just like, oh, we have to have him, too. And then they forget. If you have a double-digit lead, Harbaugh probably is going to blow it. And he's not a great in-game manager. He's a great guy, and he has a great name, and he looks good.
No, he's a terrible in-game manager. The number of like double-digit leads he's blown, it's funny. I've had Giants fans in my life, so I bring that up, and you know what their response is? We'd love to just be up by double digits 10 times in a season. Like, we don't even care how it ends. We just
loser
want the
mentality.
Leads.
That is such a loser mentality. Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating with the head coaches, honestly, because like you said, there's two youngsters. There's the OC down in Jacksonville who's just 30. There's the youngster that's helping McVay run the offense in Los Angeles. At this point, if I'm one of these lower franchises, Cleveland, Tennessee, I'm not taking a retread like Harbaugh. I'm trying to get one of those and hoping to hit on a modicum of what McVay is.
Nate Schielhoff. That's the dude. LA Rams passing game coordinator. He's the one who is going to be the guy who becomes a hot commodity for either an OC or someone just like, screw it, we're going to try with a head coaching gig. He's like 30 years old, young cat. But he's got the McMay magic dust sprinkled on his head. People are very interested. We'll see if he ends up getting getting one of these gigs this cycle once the Rams are eliminated from the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, the McVay tree already. Obviously, O'Connell, you have to say what you want about the kid in Cincinnati and Zach Johnson. He did go to a Super Bowl. I mean, McVay's tree, LaFleur was his OC before he left. So McVay's something. That's all I'd say.
All right, you want to talk about the big news in sports gambling that broke down today?
Sure.
Have you seen all the indictments on the college basketball side? 20 different schools indicted for point shaving scandals.
We've got
20 different schools who are all indicted for different point shaving scandals, everywhere from like your Kennesaw State, St. Louis, Tulane, Nicholls State, New Orleans, so a bunch of smaller schools. You know what blows my mind though, Patrick? The group that was doing this got down $458,000 on a Towson UNC A&T game. They got down $424,000 on a Kent State Buffalo first half.
Where'd they find their outs?
How in the world are you getting that much money down on these games?
That sounds to me like collusion.
I mean, it's got to be like multiple places that you're obviously getting it down. No book will give you $500,000 on a Buffalo college basketball first half. No book in the world. No matter how big of a fish you are, that's not happening.
That's what I'm saying. You got to look into the books.
Yes.
Who's taking that cash?
So a fascinating story. I think we're just getting like the tip of the iceberg here because like that, those are the two of the bigger bets, but we're talking about $250,000 on South Alabama first half over Southern Miss. We're talking about $250,000 on other like obscure schools. Which means that there are more shenanigans that need to be uncovered inside this story because this has to just be the tip of the iceberg of the information that we're going to get.
I'm just seeing it. Just broke 2 hours ago. College basketball players among 26 charged by the FBI. Look, good thing we have regulation. That's
right?
The answer. For everybody that wants to cry about sports wagering being legalized, this is why it's legalized. So these bad actors can be regulated.
I know a lot of people that have bet a lot of money. It would probably take me, 4 days to find people who could get me $256,000 down in a Northern Kentucky first half against Robert Morris.
I've never heard of anybody on a game. I've never heard of big time games getting bet like that.
Well, that's
on a first half.
That's the thing. If it was Florida, Alabama, okay, if you're a huge whale, casinos will give you higher limits, right? Because
you have a track record.
So there's a world where you could be like, well, we got this guy. He's our high roller. Like everyone's seen the movie 21. It's the exact same idea where you have some sucker guy who has a ton of money, but then you give him sharp plays, right? I like, how in the world?
When Kennesaw State is, there's 400, that the alarms don't just go off. you're just like, what is going on?
It's like
nothing
a cartoon.
Adds up.
It's like a cartoon at that point with the giant hammer just hitting someone over the head. How much does the line have to move to get a half mil down on a Kent State first half basketball game?
I'm shocked. Like, I'm shocked. There's more to this story. That's what I would say. I'm just seeing it.
Yeah. So I'm very interested to see how that one plays out, as that's one of the big news. To your point, most people who are listening to this probably understand this. This is why it's so important to be regulated. This would have, like, if you think this is the first time there's been a point shaving scandal in the last 10 years, because this is one of the first indictments we're seeing in college basketball, right, at this level, you're crazy. This is consistently happening. Now that we are regulated, you can quickly find the bad actors. Again, I have no clue how they got down this amount of money, which is going to also lead us down a rabbit hole, which I think we're going to find out more information on. But it's good to have regulation inside these books. And I think this is probably going to push people to limiting props in college basketball. I think college sports are going to have some limitation from a gambling perspective here in the coming years, Patrick.
I think your point is the one that I'm not shocked. I'm overly interested in the kids or the universities. I'm interested in the books taking the money.
Wait, like they don't reference what books took these bets, right? These have to be regulated United States books if the FBI is involved.
That's correct. That's what I'm fascinated. Who is the entity?
Right? Like, I'm looking forward to finding out more information around this story, because the idea that you can get, like, circa, biggest limits in America, right? For the most part, across college basketball games, you can get like $30,000 down on a full game.
This is not 30K.
How are you getting half a million on a first half? I cannot wait to find out more.
Yeah, I'm going to text Thomas Gable, our buddy. He runs a racing sports book at the Borgata, who runs a fastidious ship. I guarantee I haven't seen the names. I know it's not happening there. I'll ask him. And maybe on Sunday show, that's a little tease for you, Sharp Money. On Sunday show, I'll come back with an answer if he knows who these books are and if he's heard anything, because I'm kind of shocked.
You had Thomas Gable on a previous iteration of Sharp Money when you were hosting it on VSiN right after a college basketball scandal where they had to pause a line because they took so much action. I believe it was like +7.5. They had to pause it and they reopened it at +2, still took money. He alerted the FBI. That wasn't half a million dollars. That was like 20 grand.
I'm laughing because the numbers you just said are insane. I've never heard of anything like it.
So I can't wait to find out more. Who took these bets? There is so much more to this story than what we are seeing.
Our greater point in summation is forget about the kids and the schools. The people that took these bets are the ones that will be, if there's nefarious behavior going on, that is going to be the big story.
Yes.
In my estimation.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to find out more and more about this. And you can read the article. There's articles over on X. Pete Thamel has tweeted out about this. There's articles on ESPN. There's articles all over the place. So you can get yourself read up on the whole situation, but absolutely fascinating.
All right. Let's wrap it up here, Sharp Money, with our official plays. I gave Michael Buffalo +1.5. I'd lay off the game and I'd go over to VSiN and look at the AI powered props. Mike gave you a few. You can just back up and listen to those, or he'll give them again. San Francisco +7.5, Houston +3.5, Rams laying 3.5. That's what I got.
Yeah, the Buffalo-Denver game, I do like Josh Allen over rushing attempts. I think that defense is going to force him to move on the ground. Not sure how many yards are going to be gained, but I do think you're going to see a lot of attempts there. Like Harvey over reception yards in that one as well. Houston +3.5 for me. I can't get to this number. Rams -3.5. I can't get to that number. And I'll lay the 7 with Seattle. I think that Week 18 game was a blueprint for how to be able to absolutely run the football down San Francisco's throat. No Kittle. I think it makes it even tougher for this offense, which really struggled to move the football against Seattle. Even tougher here. I think the dream run ends here for San Francisco, so I'll lay it with Seattle.
Weather is going to be a big key. Make sure you get the VSiN newsletter. It'll have the weather updates. Go to VSiN.com/newsletter. Free. No obligation. Enter your email address. You'll be hooked up in the morning before these games kick off. And after the games finish, we'll be here on Sunday night for you on Sharp Money. Anything else, Mike?
I cannot wait for this weekend, Patrick. It's going to be a fun one. Oh, go Canes. I did place some Miami in the national title game +8.5. I think you can hang out. You can try and get 10. I don't think it'll ever get to 10. I think you'll see some 9s, maybe some 9.5s in market. The look ahead was 5.5. Reopens at 8.5. Yeah, give me through a key number, give me the points. That's too big of an adjustment off of a dominating win for Indiana in the semis over an Oregon team that, let's be honest, what was their best win? At Penn State. Let's take the 8.5 with the Canes.
Well, that game is Monday. So on Sunday's program, we will go in depth on the national championship game. A little tease from Mr. Samich. Enjoy your day. Download, subscribe, like, all of it. We appreciate your support here on Sharp Money. We'll see you Sunday.